Welcome to Juno Afternoon on this wonderful Wednesday. I'm Rhonda McBride, and this is going to be one of those milestone shows on our pandemic journey with some rays of light ahead. Coming up, an update from the City and Borough of Juno on how they are now assessing COVID risk and Shakespeare in the time of COVID. How Juno will experience Macbeth in an entirely different way. And at the Juno Library, the virtual world has plenty of room for book clubs. Now the forecast tonight, numerous rain showers, lows in the lower 40s, south winds around 10 miles per hour, and tomorrow, more rain, highs in the upper 40s, southeast winds around 10 miles per hour. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News. You are listening to Juno Afternoon. We want to thank every one of you for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. Although we've had pandemics and plagues throughout human history, this one has required us to constantly adapt and even innovate almost every step of the way. But with the vaccine, we've reached another turning point. Robert Barr, director of the City and Borough of Juno's Emergency Operations Center, joins us today to help us mark yet another milestone. Now, I understand, Robert, that as of today, there is a new way to assess risk based on the vaccination rate. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Rhonda. So we moved to a new level today in our community mitigation strategies. It's level 1B, and that level is reflective of the community achieving 50%, greater than 50% vaccination rate for our entire population. That includes all age groups. And we're really excited about that, right? Because we know that as our vaccination rate increases, our risk of outbreaks and our risk of COVID spread in the community decreases pretty sharply. We have really good data right now that demonstrates that the vaccines are very, very effective at preventing people from getting sick at COVID and at preventing the spread of COVID. So really happy about that. The community continues to do an excellent job of getting out there and getting vaccinated. And I'm looking forward to when we can move into our last risk level that we have defined right now, which is 1C, and we'll hit that once we get to 70% of our population.
So I understand that you have started or are making plans to vaccinate kids. So how does that affect the level? If you can get enough kids vaccinated, do you think you'll hit that 75%?
You know, it helps a lot. So, yeah, it's hard to get to 70% when you can't vaccinate kids. Kids under the age of 16 represent about 20% of our population. So to get above 70% without being able to vaccinate kids, we'd have to have almost every adult in town get vaccinated. And today, just breaking news, the CDC joined the FDA in approving the use of the Pfizer vaccine down to age 12. We have about 1,600 kids between the ages of 12 and 16 in Juno, and we are planning vaccination clinics starting this Friday at the high schools and then next Monday at the middle schools to get them their first dose.
And this is important for a number of reasons, because kids are potentially real vectors of transmission, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, we all can be, but certainly parents out there will be able to empathize with that. When you have young kids at home, you get more illnesses, right? You have more common colds. It's just kind of a natural part of life. And, you know, I'm really excited that the vaccine is becoming available for kids now rather than later in the summer, because it's going to make our summer camps much safer. It's going to allow kids to socialize and get back into a more normal way of being for the summer, at least those that are in that age range that we can vaccinate. So it's really a positive thing, I think, for our kids.
I think, though, parents, if they weren't reluctant with themselves, they might be with their kids for various reasons. And how do you plan to get around that barrier?
Yeah, that's a real concern, and I think a very natural thing for parents to think about, right? Like I have kids in that age range, and it is very normal and natural for parents to be protective of their children, absolutely. And I think it's mainly a communication thing, and it's mainly kind of getting up to speed on what the vaccine does and what the risks are and what the side effects are and comparing those risks to the risks of getting COVID and you know, the potential harm that causes. And then, of course, the benefit of a vaccinated population in preventing the spread of COVID and kind of helping us get back to normal from an economic and social perspective. So, you know, there's lots of different ways that I think that people can get up to speed. And a good one is coming up tomorrow. So tomorrow evening, the Health and Social Services Department and Dr. Zink and the public health leadership team is partnering with the Alaska Teen Media Institute to do a panel that'll be composed of those public health leaders. I'm pretty sure Dr. Zink herself will be there, as well as a bunch of Alaska teens. And Rhonda, I just emailed you a link to that, so I'm sure we can share that around. Then we'll have those links shared on our Facebook page too.
I will make sure I put them up on KTOO's website when we post a copy of our interview on Juno Afternoon's webpage. So people should look for that link. That sounds like a good way to start with the teens themselves.
I think so. And, you know, if there are parents out there listening that you know, want to get your teens registered, or your 12-year-olds too, it's down to 12 now, You can find those links on the school district's webpage to sign up for those clinics, or on juno.org/vaccine. And also it should be in your email too. If you're a Juno school district parent, emails went out to all parents of kids in that age range. But I think it's also important to note that these clinics, even though they're happening in the schools, they are open to all youth ages 12 to 18. So you don't necessarily have to be a Juno school district student.
So with the adults, there were a mix of side effects from this. Some people felt tired. Some people felt achy, especially after the second dose, if they were on a two-dose regime. Kids younger, maybe in some ways more vulnerable. What have the studies showed about side effects for kids?
So they've been largely the same. Side effect profile for the Pfizer vaccine has been largely the same comparing kids versus adults. So that's good. The side effects are very insignificant compared to actually getting COVID itself, and they fade in the vast majority of people within a day or two. And for most people who get a side effect, it's something like pain in the injection site. That's a common one, a sore arm. Another common one is feeling some malaise, fatigue, maybe a low-grade fever for a day or two. That's fairly common too. But those are good things. They're signs that your immune system is recognizing the vaccine, learning about the virus, so that if you get exposed to the real thing, your immune system is primed to fight it off. So those side effects are a good sign. Another thing that I'll note there, Rhonda, is that the studies have really demonstrated that teens actually have a better immune response, or what appears to be a better immune response than adults. So you'll remember that Pfizer was cited as having a 95% efficacy rate when looking at the adult population. And that basically compares the people that got the vaccine versus the people in the control group and how many of them didn't get COVID, right, compared to the control. In the teen group, it was 100%. So none of the teens in the vaccine group got COVID compared to those that did get COVID in the control group.
I understand, though, that there is some concern about teens and COVID, because it seems that as more and more people get vaccinated, the age group gets lower and lower in age. So it's younger people now that are getting infected.
That is the case in Juno. We, in our case activity over the past 2, 3, 4 weeks, we have been we have been seeing a sharp rise in the percentage of people on the younger end of the age spectrum. We have had very few cases in elders and even people over the age of 50, very few cases, because those populations are largely vaccinated. And our case activity lately is all in people in their 20s and younger. Not all, but it's leaning that way.
And how sick are they getting?
Well, you know, thankfully, most people, most young people that get COVID don't have significant severe outcomes, but some do. I know of a couple of people in particular, including a teen, who didn't have a severe case of COVID itself, but does have a pretty severe case of long COVID and is having a really hard time regaining, you know, the lung function that they used to have. That's the one of the major concerns that we have with kids and teens, is that we just don't have a great understanding of what the long-term health implications you can have from having COVID. And even if you have a mild case to begin with, that unfortunately, that doesn't mean that you won't have longer-term consequences.
So when we get up to that 70-plus rate, I think we will all feel better. I mean, what do you envision happening when we get to that point? As far as COVID restrictions being lifted?
Yeah. So when we get to that point of 70% of our population, I think, based on what we're seeing right now, we'll see masks and face coverings start to back off a little bit. So our requirements, our mitigation strategies for masks and face coverings will decrease. And we will say something along the lines of how we still have to wear them indoors, but only when we're in public areas where children not yet eligible for vaccine are present. So if you're in a and it'll depend what the age range is like when we get there as to what that looks like in different establishments. I think, though, even though the masking piece will become a little bit more optional when we get above 70%, I think we as a community, it'll still be really important for us to put on our empathy and respect and really sort of notch that up, because I think it's going to be a while before many people are comfortable taking their masks off, even when it's safe to do so. And I think we're going to definitely have to practice kindness.
And that seems to have been the case through this whole pandemic. So hopefully it's become a habit. Let's hope that that's what happens. I do have to kind of be a skeptic. I wonder if with the tourism season coming on full bore by May, and I know when I say full bore, it's not going to be like what it was in past years, but we'll have quite a few visitors with the small cruise ships bringing tourists in for those cruises. Do you think that we could have another sort of breakout mode coming on here?
You know, that's an interesting thing to think about. On one hand, pretty much all of the small cruise ships, and there's even some talk of some larger cruise ships potentially coming late in the summer now, but all of those mitigation plans that I've seen so far have included very high vaccination rates among traveler passengers and crew. And by very high, I mean 95 to 100% is what they're requiring. They're basically saying, if you want to be on the cruise, you need to be vaccinated and you need to be able to show proof that you've been vaccinated. So that makes me hopeful, right? That makes me hopeful in that if we do see cruise ships, whether they're small or large, later this summer, those cruise ships will come in with a higher vaccination rate than we'll have in our community, which should actually do a positive thing for our herd immunity rates. The thing that makes me concerned, the thing that I think about in that respect, is the potential impact of variants. So far, we haven't seen a variant of high consequence, meaning a variant that is that is not able to be impacted entirely by a vaccine, or that is not able to be detected by our tests right now, or that makes people significantly more sick. But there are a number of variants of concern out there, including a new one for Juno recently that we detected 2 weeks ago. And so, you know, as COVID spreads in people, COVID has the ability to mutate and create new variants. And so that's the part that I'm paying more attention to lately.
Well, we are sort of experiencing this soft opening up of Juno. We've got a couple of events coming up. We've got the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival, which is a hybrid event that will have some in person. And we've also got Theater Alaska with some outdoor performances coming. So this is kind of exciting that we have a chance to experience this. Do you think that we're rushing ahead of ourselves a little bit on these things? Or just about right?
You know, I think I would characterize us, I would place us in the just about right category. We know that outdoor events are great from a COVID mitigation perspective. The more time that we can spend outdoors, the better. It is very, very rare for COVID to spread, to transmit from person to person in an outdoor environment. The CDC came out with new guidance around masking for fully vaccinated individuals earlier last week. And one of the things that they said there is that, you know, for fully vaccinated folks, unless you're in a very densely packed crowd, think like a live performance concert type thing, a parade, that you don't need to mask. And for unvaccinated people outside, unless you are unable to social distance, so unable to stay 6 feet away from other folks, you also don't need to mask when you're outside. Masks continue to be very important for indoor environments, though.
But it's kind of exciting that people are innovating in a way, trying to come up with ways to do the things that we love and be safe about it.
Yeah, I agree. We've seen a lot of that over the course of the pandemic. There's a lot more outside activity and innovation happening. And, you know, of course, it helps that we are going into the summer rather than coming out of it.
Well, before we go, is there anything else you'd like to share with us, some thoughts? And of course, tell us how you're doing and how your staff is doing. It's been, I'm sure, a time where you probably never worked harder in a job in your life.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. But I will say that it has been very satisfying and rewarding work. And I think I can definitely speak for my staff and all of the many, many volunteers that we've had to in helping us with vaccine distribution. We are very, very grateful for all of the support that we've received in doing that work. And gosh, Rhonda, helping people get vaccinated is so much more satisfying than where we were earlier in the pandemic of trying to clamp down and control case spread and ramp up testing and all of those activities. So, you know, I think on that note, the sort of final thing I would share or maybe plug is just once again, the vaccine clinics that we have starting up for kids, 12, 13, 14, and 15 years old. This coming Friday at Thunder Mountain and JD, and then on Monday at Sancta Kahini and Floyd Dryden. Please do take a look at those. Go to junoschools.org or to juno.org vaccine and find some details. Get your kiddo signed up. We'd love to see them there and get them their first dose so that they can start having a safe and social summer.
Safe and social. That's our new mantra, right, Robert?
It is, yeah.
All right, thanks very much. Robert Barr, who is head of the City and Borough's Emergency Operations Center. Thank you so much, and thank you for helping to keep us safer.
Happy to. Thanks for having me, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Many people have been waiting to receive the single-dose COVID-19 Johnson & Johnson vaccine. This week, you have several chances to get it through public health. On Tuesday from 9 to 4 at the airport, on Wednesday, again from 9 to 4 at the Juno Public Health Center across from Twin Lakes parking lot. And on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 2 to 7 at the UAS Rec Center. The single-dose J&J vaccine is for ages 18 and up. Walk in or make an appointment at juno.org/vaccine or call 586-6000. This message sponsored by the City and Borough of Juno.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com. JunoAfternoon.com.
The Alaska Theater Festival comes to Juneau and kicks off with one of Shakespeare's greatest plays, Macbeth, featuring Enrique Bravo and Natalia Spangler as Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. Performances are outside May 14th through 23rd. Tickets are free, masks are required, and bring your own seating. Visit TheaterAlaska.org for times and locations. Something wicked this way comes.
Well, that was a good introduction to our next guest. Good afternoon. Great to have everyone here with us. I'm Rhonda McBride. As we know, the play is the thing, as Shakespeare wrote, and one of his most loved plays, Macbeth, is coming to Juno. It is a dark tale, and you know that you are in for trouble when you have three witches involved. But we're going to get a preview of this performance because it's going to be done a little bit differently. We have three actors with us from the upcoming play. Enrique Bravo as Macbeth. He's the Scottish general who is kind of our villain. Natalia Spangler as Lady Macbeth, a co-villainess. And Floridalina Langandino, who plays the noble King Duncan. So I guess what we should do is to get in the spirit of things is have each of you maybe say one of your favorite lines. So we'll start off with you, Enrique.
Sure. Mine's life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing.
A Tale Told by an Idiot. That's a title, I think, Sound and Fury of a William Faulkner book. There are a lot of quotes in this play that appear in all other places. Natalia, you get to be Lady Macbeth. That's got to be a juicy role.
Oh, yes, for sure.
So what's the favorite line you like to say?
I've got a pair that is quite a nice pairing. Early in the play, I say, "What's done is done." But by the end of the play, I'm saying what's done cannot be undone, which is a nice twist with sort of similar meaning, but very different background behind it.
You don't have out spot or whatever that line is.
I have that too. Yeah, maybe it is.
All right. And Floridalina, what is your favorite line as the noble King Duncan?
Well, I'm actually going to say, as I play the porter as well, and I'm going to say, lechery, sir, it provokes and unprovokes. And it's one of my favorite lines. Yeah.
Lechery that provokes and unprovokes. Well, you do wear a lot of hats, Floridalina, because you are also the company's artistic director. And this has got to be a challenge because I understand that some of the performances will be outdoors and they'll be in different locations. I mean, normally you have a stage, you have sets, and you're all in one place and you don't have to have constant changes in how you're going to approach things. So tell me why you decided to do it this way.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I think that we really moved to being outside because of COVID, to be honest with you. I think normally we would be going to different community centers. We'd love to go to the libraries. We'd love to, you know, like if the Filipino Community Hall was open, we'd go there. Even McPheeters Hall. We'd love to go inside, but because of the pandemic, we were like, what can we do to produce theater and make sure that not only are we as actors and producers safe, but how are the audiences safe? So that we went directly to being outside. And then that kind of brought us to Shakespeare as well. Because like a lot of us have done Shakespeare festivals outside, and I really have a love for the work and the bard's words.
And I'm trying to remember my history lessons, but I would imagine that some of Shakespeare's performances were originally done in an outdoor theater of some kind. So really, this is not that different.
It's not that different. I mean, they would have like traveling Shakespearean troops going around, but also the Old Globe is partly outside as well. So it's a pretty it's pretty much in line with what's happened before in the past.
So how do you feel as actors, and we'll start with you, Lady Macbeth, being outdoors and then changing locations through various performances?
I think it's great. It's so exciting. There's something about, especially with a play like Macbeth, where a lot of it is set outdoors and talking about the sky or the woods, and being able to, you know, be right under the sky or be in the middle of the forest, that something, it really connects you to the play that you're doing. And even like, even if it rains, like last night during our run, it was raining for part of it and we had to be out in the rain, but that I think even benefited us because it's a tragedy. And it really, the environmental elements, it can be tough because it can be cold and wet, but it also, I think, is a benefit to the play overall.
How about you, Enrique? How do you feel about being outdoors?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. So, just to echo a lot of what Natalia said, I mean, this play is built for a Juno weather. It's, you know, a lot of that rain and wind really sort of lends itself to the story of Macbeth. I've worked for a theater company on the East Coast, a Shakespeare one too, that we did stuff outside. And there's something special about doing Shakespeare out in the open and, you know, like referencing stars and there they are. And, you know, talking about this wood coming towards the castle and the, you know, you can look outside and see this wood, you know, actually there. So it makes it easy for, especially for a company like ours that isn't using a lot of bells and whistles. We are very bare bones. It's just costumes and sound. And other than that, it's, you know, what the actors bring to the table, as well as like the minds, all the minds in the room. So it kind of helps, you know, tell that story.
Well, one of the things that is so important to Shakespeare, though, is being able to hear, because the language is in a different form than we normally speak. And it's designed to be poetic. So you really have to hear it. And I wonder how well we're going to be able to hear it, especially if Juno decides to rain with some stormy weather in the midst of this. Well, it might kind of set the scene with the witches and might be nicely dark and dramatic, but I do worry about being able to hear well outside.
I think that's a valid, you know, worry. I think the different spaces that we've gone to, it changes for each space. The Treadwell is actually great. The sound in that building bounces really nicely. And it, like I said, lends itself. But places like, you know, the park, I forget what the name of the park is.
Capital School Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a little more open areas. So we've actually had to adjust how we perform in each of the spaces depending on, you know, that for a lot of reasons. We have different blocking. So we have as actors, we have almost like three different sets of blocking in our head depending on the space. So that is stuff that we've taken into consideration. We've tried to adjust accordingly.
Yeah, and the nice thing is we'll be unmasked too, the actors. So I know that is often hard for people to hear when people are talking behind masks, but the company is completely vaccinated. So we will be able to perform unmasked, which I think really helps with hearing too.
That is really good to hear. But I just imagine that if each play, each performance is different, that has got to stretch your skills as actors and actresses. I mean, just because you can't count on repeating everything exactly as you did the last time.
Yeah, well, but I think that's what acting is. I mean, that's the thing I love about theater. No show should be exactly the same. You should be adjusting to what's being put in front of you each and every show. You know, it's a constant adjustment. If it's a, you know, carbon copy of the night before, then you're not doing your job.
Yeah, and what's kind of fun too is like what you see at Treadwell Mine office building is going to be different than you see at the Capitol School Park, where we've adjusted some of the staging to use the architecture of the room at Treadwell Mine and then also of the park. So it's like fun. You're using a hill or at downtown Juneau, or you're using you know, the outside of a building for the other one and the inside of a building. So yeah, it's like, that's really fun for us as actors and myself as the director and as the design crew to be able to do all those different things.
So tell us a little bit about the plot. For those of us that may not have read Macbeth, what is the basic storyline?
Well, Macbeth is coming back from war. He's very successful. And out of nowhere come these three witches. And they give him a prophecy. They tell him he will be Thane of Glamis, which he already kind of knows, and then Thane of Cawdor, and then, which he is not, and then the king, which for him, he doesn't know what to do with that. But very much soon after, he finds out he's Thane of Cawdor. So his ambition basically takes over and becomes a giant problem in this show. He wants to be king so bad that he's willing to make moves for himself in order for that to happen. And so a lot of the play is following his sort of degradation mentally, because he's so obsessed with this thing, and how him and his wife have basically sort of fallen apart chasing after this dream, and then the repercussions that come with that, I would say, short.
So basically, though, they scheme to kill King Duncan.
Right. Yeah, it's a story about ambition.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about it too is, like, we really kind of dug into the fact that, I mean, Macbeth is a good general, and then he goes against all of his training, goes against all of his insights towards him within himself, that, you know, he gives himself advice not to do this, but he goes ahead and does it because of the ambition. So it's really interesting to see the downfall and how a good person, with all this responsibility, doesn't know what to do with it, to be honest with you. So yeah, it's really interesting and really amazing to see the relationship between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, and also to see how Natalia and Enrique navigate all that.
So this play, and we'll go to you, Natalia, to talk about this, is it's not done in the traditional Shakespearean format that the characters are cast in a modern vein. So how do you translate the Shakespearean dialogue to sort of a modern setting?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd start off by saying we aren't changing really any of Shakespeare's words. This play is severely cut down, so it's not its entire length as written. But it's all Shakespeare. It's all Shakespeare's words. But, you know, even in Shakespeare's time, he didn't set his plays like back in 10th century Scotland. He set it because they had costumes from the day that he was performing in the 1500s. So it's like, it's kind of a tradition to, like, you don't have to set the play in like an accurate time period. And ours is a very modern dress production. I wouldn't say it's like contemporary necessarily, but it's definitely within the last 50 years. And, it's a very timeless piece, so it doesn't really need to be set back in 10th century Scotland. But in terms of like making it contemporary, of course, like, we aren't speaking with British accents. We're not speaking like in a very stuffy, formal way. We're speaking as people who live in 2021. So I would say that although the language isn't modernized in any way, it's a very lively and engaging production that modern audiences will be able to relate to.
Yeah, and then in terms of that too, it's like it's an hour and a half long, so no intermission. So you come down there, you won't get too cold. You'll be able to see the whole show in an hour and a half, and really exciting cutting, and the way that Enrique and Natalia are playing their roles is really, it's really engaging and fun to see.
So tell me a little bit about the interpretation that you have of your characters. And let's go back to Enrique. How are you interpreting this tortured but sort of devious man?
Well, I think Florlino hit on it a little bit. I think he is a good man who just, you know, sort of wants to feel what it would be like to have this power. I mean, I think I'm playing Macbeth a little more sort of emotionally connected. There's a lot of very sort of highly emotional scenes that happen, and he's very in touch with how the things that he has done have affected a whole group of people, as well as how it's even broken the relationship that he has with his wife, as well as his own psyche. So I think that's probably my sort of take on Macbeth. I just think it's a really, once the deed is done, as a very emotional sort of fragile person that's kind of reduced slowly throughout the play.
So what's your favorite scene, Enrique?
It's hard. There's a couple of that I really like, because you have to sort of reach a certain height. I mean, I do like the scene after Duncan's been murdered, and the banquet scene, because every time I feel like I'm going into a battle. It's like, okay, here we go. Let's see how we end up on the other side of this. But, you know, it's just, but it also gets me excited. So.
How about you, Natalia? What's your favorite scene that you get to act in?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I would kind of echo Enrique in that it's really fun to enter a scene with you have to kind of force yourself to forget what is going to happen by the end and really let yourself just take that journey. And so there's quite a few scenes like the post-murder of Duncan or the banquet scene where you start off in one place and by the end you're at this complete different emotional level. You're at a completely different relationship with the characters in the play, in the scene with you. And that's just always so exciting as an actor because it's different every night and you never really know where you're going to get. So that's super exciting.
How about you, Floridolino?
Absolutely. I like playing the murderer. I play four different characters, but I like just the relationship that person has with Macbeth and how the murderer kind of pushes the story forward in the killing of Banquo. So yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of fun to play. And then I also play the porter, which is kind of a fun character. But yeah, I'm just having a great time being with the company, a really great company of actors, and being a part of the play and being an actor in it and also directing it has been really fun.
So what about the performances themselves? What do we need to know as the audience? Are tickets limited to this?
Right now we have around 30 people can come see the show at the Treadwell Office Mine building this coming weekend. It's Friday and Saturday and Sunday at 7 o'clock on Friday and Saturday and 3 o'clock on Sunday. And then the following week at various locations, Capital School Park, Cope Park, and then also at the Whale. I think outdoors, those parks in the second weekend is going to be they're much more open. So it can have any number of people. They're really a wide open. So up to, you know, like 50 people can come see the show. And in the Treadwell Office Building, probably around 30 can probably see it. But we might be able to get more people in there, possibly.
And just before we go, Floridolino, can you tell us a little bit about all the other things that Theater Alaska has going on? Because I don't know how you keep track of all that you're doing here during the month of May.
Yeah, we have this coming Monday, we have a new play reading by Annie Bartholomew, which is really exciting. And then we have another reading by Frank Gattass that's going to be on Monday the 24th at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Again, Annie's is on the 17th at Resurrection Lutheran Church, Sisters of Whitechapel, at 6 p.m. And then we have Neighborhood Cabaret, which is taking a musical cabaret to different locations in Juneau, May 26th to the 30th. And then we have also classes, Alexander Technique, clown class, and also acting through song, which also happens during this month. And all that information can be found at www.theateralaska.org. So come check it out.
I'm exhausted. Aren't you exhausted trying to bring all that to Juneau?
I'm tired.
All right.
Well. But it's so exciting. Yeah, we're excited.
We need to tell people to bring a chair. Bring a chair.
Yeah, bring a chair. Yeah, there's no chairs in the office building, but bring your own chair, bring a mask, and just have a lot of fun.
Wow, I'm glad that you chimed in with that. Bring a chair. Would not be fun.
Bring a chair.
Sitting on the ground or on a hard floor. All right. Well, I want to thank three of you for joining us today. Enrique Bravo, who performs as Macbeth, Natalia Spengler as Lady Macbeth, and Floridolino Lengandino as King Duncan. Thanks for being here with us today. Good luck with your performance.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to check in with the Juneau Library. They've got lots of stuff happening as well. Stay with us. And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. Boy, you do not have to look too hard to find lots of things happening this month. And you can just head over to the Juneau Public Library for lots to take in. And we have Kate Enge joining us. She's the marketing director for the library, here to tell us about a lot of things. But normally when we visit with Kate, we always ask her about what she's reading.
Yeah. So right now I'm reading, there's a new book by an author I like. Her name is Jenny Lawson. And the book she just came out with is Broken, parentheses, in the Best Possible Way. And May is Mental Health Month. And Jenny has been writing essays about her kind of like unconventional upbringing with her dad. They're both fans of taxidermied animals, which is kind of funny, and her mental health like struggles and successes, and she's really funny, and she can write in a way that's really kind of humanizing. And so I always enjoy whenever she has a book that comes out, because they're both funny and poignant, and I'm just really glad that I can kind of talk about her a little bit on the radio.
So there is a connection to something going on, right, with that book,
right,
in the library?
Not necessarily that book. We are recommending a bunch of books about mental health this month, because we do have a virtual book club at the end of the month on May 27th. And that book is actually You Should Really Talk to Someone by Lori, what's her last name? Gottlieb, by Lori Gottlieb. And we're doing a virtual book club with our friends at NAMI and a local counselor to read this book and then answer some discussion questions and talk about like themes from the book, how does it relate to your life, kind of like various like topics like that. I'm sure with NAMI and Hillary, it'll be much more directed than kind of what we can come up with, but it should be a very good discussion.
That is pretty interesting to combine a book club with a book like that and then have experts available to talk with. So how do we access this book club experience?
Okay, so we did have copies of the book available for people to pick up at all three public library branches. I think that all those free copies are gone, but we did get copies, library book copies, that are now available. So people can still come in and check out a copy so they can take it home and read. And then if they're interested in registering, we do have a bit.ly link for everybody to register for the program, and our bit.ly link is the bit.ly/JPL Book Club, with the trick that JPL is capitalized, Book Club is not. when we try to make these unique links for our program, sometimes it can get a little tricky if something's been used before or by somebody else. But we have the link on all of our marketing, on our flyers that we have at the library. We have it on our website. We have it on our Facebook. Or you could just, if you're stuck, you can call us and we can help get you registered as well.
Well, it sounds like a great conversation, and it made especially meaningful with a book in the mix. So speaking of books, we're getting towards the end of May here. We're on the back half, headed that way of the month, and kids will be getting out of school. And I'm sure that parents are hoping that there's going to be lots going on at the library for them.
Yes. So we are really excited at the end of this month, kind of also started on like June 1st or 2nd, we have our summer reading is going to be available. And last year we started using a new website called Beanstack, which was provided to us from the State Library, Alaska State Library. And we're still using that website again this year, but we also have a paper version. So if you're trying to cut down on your screens, or you just don't want to use a computer to keep track of things, we'll also have paper copies available.
And just like last year, it keeps track of minutes read. So not number of books. We don't have to know what titles. We just, as long as you're reading something, you keep track of your minutes and log them into this website. And it's available for all ages. So kids, families, even adults. And for the kids specifically, every week we're going to have a new either take home craft or project, or like a virtual online project that they can do that will tie into the summer reading theme of reading colors your world. So we have some fun activities to go with that.
Boy, that is really cool, just to have take-home projects that tie in. Is this sort of a post-COVID thing? Did you do this before? Give kids take-home kits?
This is kind of a post-COVID thing. I think normally pre-COVID, we would have like more in-person programs. Like we had puppet shows. I think we did chalk. There was chalk drawing, I think, one year at like the Douglas Library / the Fire Station building. So we tried to do more like in-person activities. But unfortunately, right now, we still, as things are looking up, more people are getting vaccinated, like cases are going down, but just in case, we're kind of doing a take home project so people can still be involved, but not necessarily have to cram a whole bunch of people in our meeting rooms, because our summer reading program was very popular, but we don't want to turn people away. So this is kind of like what we're doing in the meantime to kind of cover those bases until we can have in-person programs again.
It's a journey, right, Kate?
Yeah, it is.
Well, we're about out of time, but are there any final announcements you want to make?
No, not at this time, but I want everybody to keep looking at our library website, our Facebook, because that's what we'll make. If we have any big announcements, we'll be posting them there.
Okay, so keep your eye out. All right, thanks a lot, Kate Enge, joining us from the Juneau Public Library.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
Tomorrow on Juneau Afternoon, it's Thursday, and that's our special day reserved for our weekly program from the Black Awareness Association of Juneau. Their show is called Culture Rich Conversations. And that will do it for Juneau Afternoon today. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host and scheduler for Juneau Afternoon. Juneau Afternoon is a production of the KTOO Arts and Culture team led by Cheryl Snyder and includes Shelley Delaney and Chandra Ikugin Safran. We had help today, and I have to mention this because we are a very dog-friendly station, from our furry friends Rio and the very fashionable Thea. We want to thank all of you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This is KTOO Juneau, broadcasting from the homelands of Akwan Plené D. We broadcast on 104.3 FM from our main transmitter in downtown Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators 276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait.